From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour has been made every day since March. As families do their best to adjust to these changing circumstances, there's the pandemic, of course, with concerns about health, disruptions in school and learning, socialization being limited. There's economic uncertainty, a nationwide conversation about racism, and a heated and polarized election season that's pulled some families apart. While all of this is proving complicated for adults, all of this impacts children, too. As the experts will tell us this hour, kids can sense when adults are stressed, and they can take on those emotions themselves. They're also dealing with their own worries or even losses. Sometimes, yes, play dates, sleepovers with friends, time with friends, learning pushed to remote settings, a lot less in-person socialization. In many cases, kids aren't really seeing close family or friends like they used to. And then there are other losses for kids as well. Some have lost family members to COVID. CDC has found that since April, the number of mental health-related emergency room visits are up for minors. And tomorrow's Thanksgiving holiday will look different this year for many families. How are children handling that and all of the changes that have come with the pandemic? What can caregivers and educators do to recognize when kids may be struggling? This hour, we'll talk to the experts about how to help children understand their emotions during this difficult time. I'd like to welcome our guest now. Dr. Joanne Pedro-Carroll is a clinical psychologist and author and a speaker who's been helping kids and families for many years. Dr. Pedro-Carroll, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan. I'm delighted to be here.
Welcome to Melanie Funchess, Director of Community Engagement and Family Support at the Mental Health Association of Rochester and a member of the Black Healers Network. Melanie, always good to have you.
Thank you, Evan, for this opportunity.
And Brian Ray is an award-winning children's book author. Books include Max's Box and Unraveling Rose, which are with me here in the studio, beautifully written and beautifully illustrated. Brian, thanks for being with us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Pedro-Carroll, let me start with you, and I'm just going to ask you sort of for a broad overview. How has what you are typically hearing from families changed at all, either or maybe intensified a bit? What's been sort of the typical, if there is a typical week, or what you're hearing from families lately during this pandemic and as we approach the holidays?
Right. You know, Evan, everything you described in your preamble there is so true. I mean, life has changed and there are so many stresses. And as adults, we're all affected, and, you know, kids are no exception. One of the things that we all know is children thrive on healthy routine and consistency. But we're living during this whole pandemic in the midst of so much uncertainty. And we know that for children, for youth, the disruptions, the losses can really contribute to those feelings of loss of control over, you know, just daily life. And as difficult as the changes are for adults, you know, children are dealing with their own feelings, coupled with the emotions they absorb from their parents and their families. So certainly, it's true that, you know, some people say kids are great observers of what's going on in the world around them, but how they interpret what they hear or see may not always be accurate. And sometimes they fill in the blanks with their own worst fears. And, you know, some of those fears are sometimes far worse than the reality. So I do hear from children fears of loss of friends and family, death. I often ask children for their three wishes. Many children say things like, well, no more COVID. I wish my parents weren't fighting or family members. I wish there was no more sickness, death. I wish I could see my friends again and hug my teacher.
Mm-hmm. And when they're expressing those kinds of wishes, Dr. Pedro-Carroll, you know, often their family, their parents, their caregivers can't give them everything they want right away. What's an approach that helps their caregivers be direct with them about realistic expectations for what's possible without sort of adding to the anxiety or the sense of loss?
Yeah, great question, because we want to be able to listen to children's feelings, right? And also to be able to validate that there are going to be times when they feel sad or frustrated or mad about and disappointed about how they're feeling. And, you know, one of my favorite mentors was Mr. Rogers, and he said, what is mentionable is manageable. So as parents and caregivers, one of the things we can be doing is letting children know that they're not alone with what they're feeling, that we're kind of in this together with all the different feelings. And yet there's a reality of helping them accept the losses, you know, loss of control over some of the things, you know, new routines, new ways of celebrating a holiday. But I think the more we can engage children in being part of the solution, give them some choices about kind of the new normal, that can help a lot too.
Yeah, I just a few weeks ago was taking my boy over for an outdoor play date, you know, with distance, and been really, really lucky. November was pretty nice. There was a lot of nice mm-hmm. days, and but it was you know, with one of his best oldest friends. He's 8 years old, and he said, "Can I hug Isaac?" And I said, "Yeah, you can't. You know, I know how you feel." And he just went, "Oh, I want to be able to hug him again." And I said, I'm with you, buddy, and I want to hug my friends, and we will. I promise we will. But I saw just in that moment, you know, my boy's pretty resilient, and he has so many advantages that a lot of kids don't, and I think he knows that. But even in that moment, the notion of not being allowed to hug your friend, even if you see them, is
right.
He knows why, but it's still hard. And it was kind of a jolt to me to remember that even though he's pretty resilient, I need to keep the door open for him to express when things are harder for him. Is it as simple as just saying sometimes, hey, if you want to talk about stuff, like, let's leave the door open? I mean, because what I don't want to do is make him think, I don't want to push him so hard to think, boy, you know, this is hard and you should be down or you should be sad. I don't want to sort of put those thoughts in his mind. But at the same time, I want him to be able to say to me, Dad, it was great to see my friend, but it's really hard sometimes. You know, I mean, I'm trying to split the difference, I guess, Dr. Pedro Carroll.
Right, right. Well, you want to be able to help him know that, yeah, you know, there are going to be times when you feel like this stinks. And to be able to express it, to put it into words, is actually calming. Everything we know about emotional intelligence is that when we can name our feelings, it actually, neuroscience shows this, the benefits of putting feelings into words. It calms that worry center of the brain and moves the activity to the frontal cortex for rational thinking, problem solving, good judgment. And it doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, overwhelm a child with too many emotions, but helping them know that whatever they're feeling, it's okay. And giving them coping skills to know that feelings can change. There are things we can think of to do that can help us feel better. You know, and you can show your friend how much you care about him with your smile and your words. And you can tell him, hey, I wish I could give you a hug.
Absolutely.
And we will be able to do that again. Hope is that travel virtue that gets us through the tough times, right?
Absolutely. Boy, you know, Melanie Funchess, I think about the many conversations we've had about, you know, really taking care of one another and the ways that, you know, that we can be attuned to when each other is hurting. And I think about kids, especially tomorrow, kids who may not have a big family gathering or have something limited, understandably so. Where do you start with the approach to kids, whether it's on Thanksgiving or whether it's just in general during this pandemic? And what are your big concerns right now, Melanie?
One of my concerns is that we make sure that we understand that our children feel our energy. Children, you know, we talk about children are very observant, but our children are also somewhat empathic, right? So even if you tell your child, well, everything is great, but if your energy is saying it's not great, your children will pick up on that. So we've got, and what I've chosen to do in my parenting and what I talk to other parents about is being real and honest with your kids, but helping them to normalize having the conversation, right? Just like the previous speaker said, just like you said, you know, we talk about, you know, this is not the way we usually do the holidays, but we're doing this way because of this. Like I've said to my kids, my kids are older, you know, my kids are emerging adults. And I've said to them, we're spending our time here and not going to see my mother-in-law who's 87 years old because we want to be able to see her again next year. You know, and if my kids had been five, I would have said, you know, right now we need to do things in this way so that we can have the time to be able to be with them later. Because we don't want to spread germs and things like that. And being real with your kids, but normalizing the conversation goes a long way to reducing their stress. Because if they hear, well, this is what mom says, this is what auntie says, this is what granddad says, okay, we can do this.
Yeah, and
may I?
Yeah, please, Dr. Peter.
Really highlight what Melanie just said. It's so true. You know, children take their cues from us as adults, and if we're managing stress and conflict in healthy ways, that sets the example for them. And it's so many studies show that stable, supportive parents and caregivers are a lifeline for youth during difficult times. And that having a caring adult in a child's life is so related to resilience and better outcomes. Just being in the presence of a compassionate, safe adult can help kids calm down. And in families, we can hopefully be that person for each other.
Well, and I'm going to get Matt and Canandaigua on the phone in a minute because he's got a question that I think Dr. Pedro Carroll and Melanie can really tackle. And then I want to talk to Brian about his books and the approach here because they really are beautiful, and I think they're going to weave in really nicely to this. But Melanie, one other point that I think I'd like to hear you emphasize is the notion that for adults who are nervous about maybe their own emotions impacting kids, do you think this is as good a time as any to remind people that therapy is a sign of strength? I mean, therapy isn't a sign of weakness, that therapy is not
Absolutely.
A sign that... Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
You know, I am very... You know me, Evan. I tell people, having therapy is a show of a sign of strength. It shows that you want to seek wise counsel to help you think through and talk through the things that are challenging to you. You know, I tell my friend, I'm a preacher's kid. I tell my friends, you can have Jesus and a therapist too. You know, we can do this. And remember, everything that we do as the adults in the lives of children is modeling and teaching. So when we model that we seek help, we teach our children that it's okay to seek help. The lessons that our children are learning from watching us now are the lessons that they're going to carry into adulthood. So we really want, especially in this time, and we could tell our kids if we're feeling nervous, be honest. Say, yes, I'm feeling a little nervous too, but I understand that we're going to get through this. That way it helps your child to know that they can open up and then seeking the help. Because sometimes we can't manage it all within ourselves. If we seek out help, we reach out to, you know, no one ever questions that if your car is knocking, oh, no, you shouldn't go see a mechanic. No one says that. If you have a huge toothache, you know, and no one says, well, some people may not want to go see the dentist, but no one will begrudge you and say there's something wrong with you for going to the dentist. So in the same like thing, if you need help managing mental and emotional things, go see a therapist. Mm. It's good for you, like apples.
and you can do it remotely, like Dr. Pedro Carroll?
Absolutely. And again, to really underscore what Melanie's saying is we're better parents when we take time to take care of ourselves. There's no question. Every study shows that a healthy, well-adjusted parent is adult is going to be a better parent. We're better equipped with the patience that we need. Definitely a sign of strength. And, yeah, we can work remotely without being remote.
Well, let me get Matt's phone call first in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, so I was calling mostly to just kind of maybe get some advice, either in regards to what I can do to make this easier on my child or just on myself. And the situation is I have a sixth grader, and she is doing the remote learning 3 days out of the school week. An issue that's caused a lot of stress in the relationship between me and her and me, her and her mother, has been her essentially, she's struggling with her grades, but she's not struggling because she's not learning the information. She's not doing the assignments she's supposed to be doing while she's home. And it's causing a lot of tension, I guess you could say, in the household, with either me or my wife kind of snapping on her about, you know, you need to do your work. And she says she does it. And it's just a lot of, we don't know if she, because there has been times where she says she did the work and the school just didn't update the app on assignments completed. And I don't know. I'm just looking for some advice, whatever you can give me, honestly.
Let me start with Dr. Pedro Carroll. Hang in there on the line here, if you could, Matt. Go ahead, Dr. Pedro Carroll.
Yeah, you know what? First of all, I really empathize with parents in that situation. It's not easy. And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of young people around middle school, sixth grade, and one of the things that they're experiencing is it's confusing. There are times when, you know, they're having a hard time. If it's a hybrid learning model, just keeping track of the days and the assignments. And, you know, there are also maybe, you know, some feelings of lack of motivation because it's not the in-person learning anymore. So I would suggest a couple of things. One would be to, and certainly I also understand it can create conflict between parents, and that adds to the stress of the situation. But maybe start by engaging your daughter in a conversation where you can empathize with her and say, look, you know, I know it's tough having, you know, all of these different Zoom sessions and keeping track of assignments. Let's work together to figure out how we can make this better for you. And give a lot of empathy to her situation. Looks like you're pretty frustrated. Let's talk about that. What are the hardest parts for you so we can put our heads together and figure it out? You know, I'm hearing from so many parents and young people, you know, this is a lot of stress. And sometimes what happens is it's easy to fall into a pattern of negative comments, which kids perceive as nagging. And maybe look for ways to catch her when she is doing her work and comment and reinforce. Express positive comments about, wow, those math problems were pretty tough, but you hung in there. That was impressive perseverance. To try and flip the situation to one where she can feel like you're on her team, all working together through a tough time. It's not easy for parents or young people at this time.
Matt, do you think that she feels comfortable opening up about emotionally how the remote learning, you know, the frustrations mm-hmm. or the distance that she's feeling about it, and maybe if she's not wanting to do the work, why? Do you think is she pretty open about that, or is it pretty closed off?
I think a lot. Well, first off, the doctor gave some probably really good, useful advice about I should probably be more positive. But I think a lot of it does have to do with the fact that, frankly, she's not in school and she doesn't want to do it, and she can get away with kind of manipulating the scenario so she can do what she wants, like watch YouTube videos or just whatever. You know, I remember being in sixth grade. I didn't want to do my schoolwork either. The difference was I was in school.
Yeah, yeah, I hear that.
Evan, I want to interject here.
Yeah, go ahead, Mel.
When we're looking at behavior, remember, behavior is a communication of unmet need, right? And we always need to start with, why would anyone behave this way? So I want you to really step back, because we say, well, you know, we always want to look and think that, well, I was in sixth grade and I did this, but we're not her. And we are not in the midst of a pandemic, and we are not. So we start to think about what are the reasons, because if we, because the thing about behavior being a communication of unmet need, if you meet the need, the behavior will go away. And some of it may be, you know, sitting in front of a screen for hours upon hours of the day, she may have a hard time focusing because she's not used to doing that. She doesn't have the interaction in the same way. It could be that, you know, she misses her friends, and seeing them through the screen reminds her that she misses her friends. It could be any number of things. But if we start from the place that understanding that all behavior communicates unmet need and asking ourselves, why would she behave this way, especially if it's atypical, it'll give us a much wider swath of space to try and figure out where it's coming from so that we can do something to address it that more tightly meets the need. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I'm trying to learn, and I appreciate the advice from both of y'all, and both were very positive and things that put some perspective to the issue at hand. So I want to thank you both, and thank you, Evan, for taking my call.
Yeah, you got it, Matt. Anytime. Thank you for that. And I want to bring in Brian Ray, because this is, go ahead, Mel.
I just want to encourage Matt and say, Matt, you are a great parent. You are not alone. You are doing the best you can with what you've got. And there's a ton of other parents going through the same thing as you. And we are all in this together. And I just want to say that.
Well,
absolutely.
Brian's story, I'm holding a book called Max's Box by Brian Ray. And, you know, it's not aimed at sixth graders, Matt, and other parents of that age. But the concept may be the same in that, you know, we may not know what our kids are struggling to express and what is shutting them down, preventing them from either wanting to do schoolwork or open up about emotions or have that tough conversation or get involved with a sport or an activity. And there may be things that they sort of are filling up in their box instead of letting it out. And if you could, Brian, congratulations on the books that you've put together. They're beautiful. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do with books like Max's Box and Unraveling Rose.
Well, I'm a parent myself, and I can really empathize with what Matt's going through, because we have a 5-year-old who started kindergarten this year, and it's been a real roller coaster ride. One of the things I discovered early on as a parent, that the biggest challenge was helping my children learn that emotional vocabulary and giving them the tools to express themselves in a healthy way. I was a professional writer, screenwriter, and I had the opportunity to do a project for Disney. And then I decided after that to shift my focus for telling stories for children through picture books. And again, having that experience of being a parent and having to learn myself, frankly, how to help my children with those tools really inspired me to write these stories.
Max's Box, I started to describe a little bit, but go ahead and tell the listeners what it's about.
Max's Box is about a little boy named Max who has some very big feelings that he is not sure what to do with. So he puts them inside of a magic box that he has, and the more that he puts inside, the bigger it grows, until the box becomes so large that it makes it impossible for Max to do any of the things that he used to enjoy doing, like playing with friends, because he's holding on to all of these emotions and they're getting in the way of him moving forward. And finally, with the help of some family and friends, he is able to find a way to let that box go.
Unraveling Rose is a story of a little bunny doll who is a child's good friend, but Rose has an issue. Rose gets really hung up on one little problem, one little thread, and starts struggling to really do anything. Tell me about Unraveling Rose.
Rose is, as you said, about a little stuffed bunny who has a persistent unwelcome worry thought that won't leave her alone. And her way of dealing with it is sort of pulling at the loose thread under her left arm. And she keeps pulling at it, thinking it's going to make it better. And, of course, it doesn't. She unravels herself, and she manages to put herself back together and then and realizes that if she practices not thinking about that thread that's there, she can get back to doing the things that she enjoyed doing before.
I want to ask you, Brian, and then I hope Melanie and Joanne can also speak to this question, because I find these books beautiful and important, and there's a reason they're award-winning, and there's a reason that I think parents and kids can connect with Rose and with Max and these stories of kids or a doll or really a person who may get hung up on one problem or one issue to the detriment of others or start to sort of fill up a box with emotions and not be able to get anything else done. Inevitably, when we talk about these kinds of subjects on this show, and this has been true for the last 7 years, Brian, I will hear from listeners, I think very good faith and well-intended, and I'm not sort of demeaning, but I'm just letting you know, I'm gonna hear from listeners who say, we're making kids too soft. We are making kids feel like their emotions will own them or will cripple them or will prevent them from doing anything. And what we need to be doing is teaching them toughness and resilience and stick-to-itiveness. And I'm not sure any of those things, by the way, are mutually exclusive, but sometimes that's kind of the presentation I hear from listeners who push back against this. And I'm curious to know what you would say to that, Brian.
Well, I've had the good fortune to have the opportunity to read to many school children in person and now virtually. And I can tell you that they are all eager, ready, and willing to talk about this. And that every discussion I have is engaging. They're curious. They have ideas. They want to talk about it. And I think the reason that they want to talk about it is because it is empowering. As Dr. Peter O'Carroll said at the beginning, when you can articulate your feelings, it has an impact. And I think that impact is empowering because it gives them some control in the situation. It gives them perspective. So I would argue that talking about these things with kids and encouraging our children to talk about them, in fact, does make them more resilient.
And I might add, Brian, there's plenty of research that supports that being able to label feelings, understand emotions in ourselves and others is essential for being able to regulate big emotions, right?
Absolutely.
And if we don't have the ability to put it into words, to talk about it, to express it, those feelings will come out in some other ways that aren't so healthy or adaptive.
Sure.
You know, it can result in a lot of anxiety or angry, acting out. So what you're doing with those books, I think, is such a benefit for children. And I plan on getting those books and using them in my practice as well.
They're beautiful. Beautifully illustrated. Go ahead, Melanie.
My thing is that I hear you talking about people saying that we make our kids soft.
Yeah.
I think that where do they do that at? I don't know. I have a thing, right? Being able to articulate your emotions is part of being able to regulate your emotions, right? And there's no more strength. Dr. Carl Bell, who was one of my mentors and an incredible ancestor, he used to say there is nothing cooler than being a cool person in the room when everybody's just off, right? And part of that is learning how to articulate and regulate what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to articulate our emotions is one of the strongest things that you can do and one of the strongest things you can teach a child.
I think also there's a lot of lingering misconceptions and stigma that goes along with expressing emotions. I was at the playground fairly recently with my younger daughter, and I saw a little boy fall, and he hurt himself, and the adult who was with him said, "Come on now, big boys don't cry." And I know what I got the feeling, it wasn't said in a malicious way. It was sort of like a, "Come on, you're going to be okay," sort of tone of voice. But they're all, I think what the adult didn't realize is they were communicating to that child, crying is not okay, right? So these things still go on, right? We still have these lingering ideas about how we should express ourselves, when we should express ourselves, if we should express ourselves. And I just think that it's important to sort of redirect adults into the idea that the goal is to teach children how to express themselves in a healthy way, because that's going to be much more beneficial to them than sort of shutting it in and pretending like they're okay.
Yeah. Amen, Brian. And certainly that's applicable to all children and all people in terms of our ability to get in touch with and express emotions. But I will just say, you know, as the parent of an 8-year-old boy and watching the way everything from media to pop culture to society operates, we still have real problems with what masculinity means and doesn't mean, and what it means to be a boy and a man. And I think that that's been to great detriment to the development of a lot of boys for a long time, because I think that feeling prohibited from being in touch with feelings is a problem for anybody. And it happens to everybody, but often happens to boys. So let me do this. I'm late for our only break, and we're going to come back. I've got more emails and phone calls that all of our guests, I think, will have valuable insight for as we talk about keeping the focus and understanding the mental health of children on Thanksgiving, during the pandemic, as we head for the holidays and beyond. There is a great amount of disruption and change going on this year. Kids have amazed us so often in schools as we get ready for holidays. But kids are kids. I mean, they're people. And people are struggling in many ways. And so we're talking to Melanie Funches, Director of Community Engagement and Family Support at the Mental Health Association of Rochester, and a member of the Black Healers Network, Brian Ray, an award-winning children's book author. And you can look for the books Unraveling Rose and Max's Box. Dr. Joanne Pedro Carroll is a clinical psychologist and author and a speaker. And we're right back to your feedback after this only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday, it's Thanksgiving. Turkey Confidential is coming your way, an annual tradition. Maybe it's a smaller turkey for you and your family this year. Maybe not. But if you've got questions, it's a great place to learn, and often for all those of us who are listening as first-timers, laugh a little bit. It's good to laugh. Hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving wherever you are. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to get Carol in Canandaigua on the phone next. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm an educator, and I my ears perked up when the parent called in about their daughter. So I teach 100% virtually right now, and actually with middle school. And so my perspective is that so often adults underestimate kids' ability to manage their feelings and push through difficult situations, which holds them back. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm not saying kids are soft. I heard somebody say that we're kind of nurturing kids to be soft, but we forget that they can learn how to push through these difficult situations and be successful. So I guess, you know, I don't take that away from them is what I'm saying. And I think sometimes parents are so diligent to try to make things easier for their kids because it's hard to watch them go through difficult times. But let them.
Okay, that's a beautiful sentiment. Let me start with Melanie on that. What do you think, Melanie?
I agree that our children are a lot stronger than
than we sometimes give them credit for. And I also agree that there are times that we need to let our children try to figure it out. You know, but I think sometimes parents either, like it's that pendulum swing that they either go way one way or way the other. They'll say, I'm going to let them figure it out. I'm just going to step back, let them figure it out. Or I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to fix it, right? Let's try to make sure that we always have balance in all things. You know, you can let your child figure it out while letting them know that you're here. You know, you can, my thing is in all things that we do, make sure that we have balance. That our children will know that they can figure out and push through, that we believe in them, but that we're here if they need us. Does that make, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Absolutely. Dr. Pietrocaro, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's both and. You know, this is not an either or. I totally agree that we need to have, you know, positive expectations for our children to be able to have some grit and determination to push through the challenging times. At the same time, that can go hand in hand with listening to their feelings, understanding what they're going through, and particularly at a time when I think we all are feeling some loss of control over our daily lives. Giving young people that sense of agency by listening to them and saying, well, okay, I know there are some things here we can't change or control, but let's figure out what is within your control to do differently here after you listen to the feelings. So it can really be a winning combination of acknowledging feelings, listening carefully, and then kind of joining together to create some problem solving and a plan for coping skills. But it goes hand in hand with being able to express and understand emotions.
Brian, you want to add to that?
Sure. I think it's a great point that they are not mutually exclusive, you know, being there to support them and letting them find that, you know, letting them work their way through something. My stories tend to focus on a younger crowd. So from my perspective, it's all about, you know, you wouldn't send someone into a task without the right tools to do the job. So, you know, if we can start working with the kids at a younger age to give them the tools that will enable them to work through more complicated situations as they get older, I think that's part of the equation as well.
I want to read one more note. This is from Benjamin regarding Matt's phone call from Canandaigua earlier. So, Carol, thank you for that. Everyone's responding to that, trying to lift up Matt, and frankly saying we relate so much. I mean, there's so many people who are with you there, Matt. Benjamin says, I think it's also critical to remember for everyone, including the caller whose daughter is having difficulties, is that we as parents are not perfect. If you make a mistake, work to do better next time and share that with your child. That's from Benjamin. I like that because to me that hits in two different ways. A lot of the times when we're thinking about, when we're much more in tune with sort of looking for signs about kids or is their emotional state impacted in a negative way? Are we looking for signs or are they not behaving in a way that we think is appropriate? Are they not doing the work that we think they should be doing? It maybe takes our own focus off ourselves. And if we are to want kids to open up emotionally, it's probably valuable to occasionally say to them, hey, I just want you to know I'm a little sad. I need to pick me up. This is impacting me in this way. This is affecting me. It's okay to feel this way. I feel this way. Or I made a mistake today, and here's how I want to make it better, to sort of maybe model that kind of thing. I think Benjamin's note's really well taken, Dr. Pietrocaro. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the truth is every single one of us is human. We mess up all the time. And how helpful it is to allow ourselves to, you know, to say that, to allow ourselves to be vulnerable enough to say, yeah, I messed up. I made a mistake here. But then to be a model of, but you know what? I did learn from it. And I'm going to do it differently in this different way next time.
Melanie, I'm thinking as kids get older, you know, eventually there's a conversation with the parents of, oh, you never made a mistake? You know, and there's going to be those moments. How do you feel about being open about our vulnerabilities with kids?
I think that it's critical that we are open with our I think that it's critical that we're open with our children with these things. And there's times when I've said to my own children that, you know, I'll say, I'm feeling a little down. Can I have a hug? Right. And for one of my children who they were like, Mom, I remember I used to pick you up when you were down. I said, yes. And it gave them a sense of empowerment. Right. That they had an ability to give something. But it also, like I said before, everything we do as the adults in the lives of children is modeling and teaching. That it teaches them that we're all human and that we all grow, we make mistakes, and that we are no different than they are, just bigger.
Brian, you want to add to that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm getting back to something that Dr. Pedro Carroll said at the beginning, you know, when children ask a question and that there's no answer, they tend to fill in the gaps with their own imagination. Mm-hmm. Something that we do with our almost 5-year-old is if she asks a question about something that's going on and we don't know the answer, we're honest about the fact that we don't know. And then we make it a project. Well, let's see if we can find the answer. Let's do it together. And that honesty, I think, it calms her, you know, because she's not left to wonder what's going on, you know, and then we're engaged together in finding an answer. Which she seems to enjoy.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Oh, I say that is awesome.
So, yeah, reassuring. It's a great response to a child. Mm.
Let me read Sheila, who says, is a teacher. Evan, lots of students in our hybrid model expect to be getting all A's, and they're freaking out when they're not getting all A's. Kids are staying home with anxiety attacks or not engaging with lessons. Kids are working 6 hours a day at jobs on their asynchronous days. The whole school model is upended, and teachers are struggling too. Sheila, thank you for that, and much love to everyone in this temporary ecosystem. And maybe I'll use a different phrase. I won't use the word new normal, because here's an email from Liz at the University of Rochester's College Center for Advising Services. Liz says, good afternoon, Evan. It's important to stop defining this moment as a new normal. The fact that this difficult, temporary, survivable hardship is not normal needs to be normalized. Not being able to hug each other is not normal. It should not be defined as such. The fact that loss hurts and that it is okay to not feel okay must be normalized. When we love each other and accept the reality and complexity of our feelings, we are ironically more able to experience joy. Maybe not the socially sanctioned, super excited Western notions of happiness, but peaceful joy. Thank you, and all the best to you and your guests. That's from Liz, again, at the University of Rochester College Center for Advising Services. Dr. Pedro Carroll, what do you make of that email?
I think it was beautifully stated. And what Liz is saying is, you know, there is this need for us to accept and acknowledge, particularly with our young people, that what's happening has been really hard and there are real losses. And also to acknowledge that we'll get through it. And losses are painful, and to not pretend that young people don't experience that. You know, I also think there is a part of what we're all dealing with that's so helped by being able to express appreciations and acknowledge each other in ways, you know, tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and here we are probably with lots of different ways of maybe getting together, maybe not getting together. I believe in a 5-to-1 rule for families and relationships, because I know a lot of people are feeling so much stress. Hopefully there are 5 positive comments for every 1 negative, and being able to express appreciations to each other for the value that each person has. So the Native American Lakota culture called expressions of appreciation keeping the water sweet, and water is essential for survival. It's true with relationships too.
Beautiful. I have questions for all three of you as we get ready to wrap the hour. And Melanie Funches, let me start with you. As a member of the Black Healers Network, I'm thinking about Brian's book about Rose, Unraveling Rose, and this notion that, we can, you know, we all maybe have something that kind of gets to us. That maybe it's something we don't like about ourselves. Maybe it is working with depression. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something that has happened, a loss. And we learn in different ways to mitigate or deal with that. But sometimes when we think about healing, the word healing, Melanie, we might have an unrealistic expectation that we can make something go away, as opposed to understanding that healing isn't, you know, making it sort of perfect or a painful idea gone necessarily. How do you want us to think about healing, whether it's kids or ourselves, going forward here?
Healing, when we talk about healing, healing is not making the thing that was bad go away. It is about making it so that we can integrate it into ourselves, be able to move on from it to where we can remember it, but it doesn't hold the same pain for us, and that we're able to evolve out of it. Healing, so just like when you break a bone, you know, I was an athlete as a kid and I broke some bones, but when the bone would heal, the bone is stronger, right? Because it's not that the break went away. The break is still there. You can, you know, but you can see the healing over it, where it's been made stronger. When we heal, when we truly heal, we're able to deal with a thing and process a thing and move through it. You know, I did not say get over it. I didn't say get past it. I said move through it. Mm. And I just want to comment on the sister from U of R.
Yeah, yeah.
I just have got to say, thank you, thank you, thank you, because we keep trying to normalize something that's not normal.
Yeah.
And let's just know the truth that none of this is normal, and we are having normal reactions for an abnormal situation.
So well said.
Not trying to normalize the situation.
Right.
Yep, so well said.
Yeah.
Dr. Pedro Carroll, I'm thinking about Dr. Shannon Bennett of Weill Cornell Medicine, who said that there's a very physical component to anxiety: headaches, stomach aches, nausea, muscle aches, pain, avoidance, outbursts. And thinking about kids, 90 seconds or so, maybe some symptoms or signs in particular. I mean, it's one thing to talk about maybe expressing emotions, but what are the indicators that something acute may be going on emotionally with kids?
Right, right. And so important to pay attention to our children's behavior and really take a look at what might be underneath it. Certainly, big changes in their typical behaviors, maybe more anger, apathy, meltdowns, frequent meltdowns, withdrawing. That's really something to pay attention to. Complaints of stomach aches, headaches, very often that's a kind of our bodies responding to what we're feeling, and it's a way of saying help. You know, I need some help getting through this tough time. And again, to echo, it is a sign of strength to get professional help for ourselves and our children. And you know, there is a lot of availability. I know many of us are working remotely, but a lot of good resources in our community.
Boy, you said it, and thank goodness. And Brian Ray, when we think about ways to reach kids, the work you do as an author is helping kids, especially younger kids, understand ideas in books. How do you see maybe your work in these kinds of avenues as opening up conversations with kids?
I think especially at times like this, it's always important, but especially in this moment in time, it is important to make moments to spend together as a family, put down the devices, turn off the TV, and make quiet moments together, because I think younger children especially need to feel a connection to their parents to help regulate their emotions. And our family, story time is a major component of that. Being quiet, snuggling up, reading a book, we relax, we focus on a story, and depending on the story, it can lead to wonderful conversations and a real feeling of togetherness. And that's going to help bring everyone's anxiety down a little bit. So I think it's really important to emphasize just how important sort of building those quiet moments can be right now.
Brian Ray, the author of Max's Box and Unraveling Rose. Where do people find the books, Brian?
Locally in Rochester. I know they're available at Hippocampo Books, which is a wonderful store.
Absolutely.
They're available, I think, at all the online places. And those are just a couple of ideas.
I think that's a great start. Not to denigrate the online. I mean, a lot of us use it and sometimes we need it, but it's great to know there's independent and small options as well. Hippocampo, among others. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Brian, congratulations on the books. Thanks for the work you're doing. And thanks for making time to join the program today.
Thank you so much.
Melanie Funches with the Mental Health Association of Rochester and the Black Healers Network. It is always nice to talk to you. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Melanie. Thank you for being with us.
Happy Thanksgiving and shop local.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who are about to be shopping, you can do it. Dr. Joanne Pedro-Carroll, a clinical psychologist, author, speaker, working remotely with so many families. Thanks for making time for the program this afternoon. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, Evan. And I want to give a shout out to parents, teachers, first responders. You're doing the best you can. And truly, Evan, to you and all you do on your program at WXXI, you enhance the quality of life in our community. Thank you.
You're very kind. I appreciate that. And from all of us at Connections, and that's Megan Mack. It's usually Rob Braden, but Megan is engineering today. She's producing as well. I'm Evan Dawson. We hope you're surrounded by love and peace on Thanksgiving. We'll talk with you soon.